Welcome to Biohackers Lab, Episode 3. In today's show, I'm going to be talking with my guest, Marika Zaboris. I wanted to just bring up a point before the interview starts with Marika, where during the interview, I wanted her to discuss the point where the Health Professions Council of South Africa released a press release that said that Professor Tim Noakes was guilty. Now, this was false, and it was a part of the craziness that happened during this case against Professor Tim Noakes. And this was back in October 2016. So I just wanted to highlight how the Health Professions Council released a guilty press release when there wasn't even a verdict yet concluded in the case, and how it confused everyone involved, both Professor Tim Noakes and his side, and even the Health Professions Council side at the case hearing, and they had to revoke the press release and rescind it. And so I didn't get a chance to get Marika to explain that because I distracted her from her train of thought. But I just wanted to get that point across. So otherwise, it was a fantastic show, and I hope you're going to enjoy it because there was lots of great information in it.
Welcome to Biohackers Lab, a place where we talk to smart people who are figuring out how to improve health in interesting ways. Join us to discover how you can biohack your life, your body, starting today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Biohackers Lab. On today's show, I'm going to be talking with my guest, Marika Zaboris, and we're going to be talking about Professor Tim Noakes and his, what we're calling a trial, but it was more of a hearing, and it took 3 years to get to the verdict of not guilty. So if you don't understand the story that Tim Noakes had to go through in South Africa with the low-carb, high-fat diet saga, we're going to be going through that story today with Marika. So just to give everyone a little bit of background about Marika, she's a journalist who comes from a hard news background, which means that she did mainstream media of the typical politics and crime stories, and she's just progressed and followed on with her passion into lifestyle journalism, which also includes editing and research, and particularly now the low carb, high fat lifestyle research around that. So she blogs at her website foodmed.net, and I'd like to say thanks, Marika, for coming on today.
Thank you very much for having me, Gary. I'm looking forward to talking to you and to your listeners.
Great, thanks. So I think we're going to jump straight into it, and we've got to start right in the beginning of this three-year process that Professor Tim Noakes had to go through. So this was back in the year 20, we're in 2017 at the moment, but this was back in 2014. So if you could just start us off, how did we get to the hearing process? Where did it all begin?
Some people will tell you that it all started with a single tweet in February 2014. But in fact, my research and also listening to the argument from Professor Tim Noakes's legal team, the tweet appears to have been little more than a pretext for basically an unprecedented prosecution of one of South Africa's most eminent scientists for his views on nutrition, but basically a full-scale, full-frontal attack on his credibility and integrity, but also crucially, the science for low carb, high fat.
Yeah. So this tweet was in essence a way, you think, to get Professor Tim Noakes in front of the Health Profession Council of South Africa to talk about his views on low carb, high fat, and how maybe that there's individuals out there who don't want him talking about that. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes. And for many different reasons, because on the surface, the charge against him was unprofessional conduct for giving unconventional advice on breastfeeding babies on a social network. And there were three pillars to the charge that had almost very little to do with low-carb nutrition per se. So the charge ended up basically around that he had a doctor-patient relationship with the breastfeeding mother on Twitter, that he gave medical advice, not information, and that the advice that he gave was unconventional because it was not evidence-based, therefore it could have been dangerous and life-threatening. When in fact, the strange thing to say is that the case actually had nothing to do with any of that, because Professor Noakes, he is an A1 rated scientist. That means he's one of the few in the world with that rating for both sports science and nutrition. And he was going against orthodoxy. And there are so many examples of what happens to people when they go against orthodoxy. Mm. You know, you just have to think about people like Galileo and Semmelweis, the doctor who realized that if doctors would only wash their hands, they could save people's lives. Many doctors pilloried him, ridiculed him for, I think, decades. And in that time, people died. So, you know, the perils of challenging orthodoxy are very well known. It seems to me that this was yet another incidence of what happens to some people when they go against dogma.
And especially when you enter the world of nutrition, I find if you talk nutrition or anyone's food or diet, it's a very emotional topic, and people can get that word is emotional. I've seen it with Professor Tim Noakes in some of the reviews or remarks that people have given to him in the paper, and also just knowing what other doctors have said about him. And I think there was a situation, wasn't there, where even before all of this started, he had a whole bunch of doctors put a scathing attack against him, or I don't know if it should say attack, but very bad remarks about him in the press.
Well, I would call it full-scale attack, it started off, if I'm not mistaken, it started off with cardiologists, there's a very good reason for that, because conventional nutrition advice is basically low-fat, high-carb, and that's based on what's called the diet heart hypothesis, that saturated fat equals heart, saturated fat causes heart disease. And the hypothesis is currently still unproven after Dr. Ansel Keys proposed it in, 1950s? Mm-hmm. Into the 1970s. So more than 50 to, am I right? Mm. 50 to 70 years. The conventional advice is based on the diet heart hypothesis. And Professor Noakes goes completely against that hypothesis. And there are many vested interests in food and drug companies that have benefited from that. And yet, the Health Professions Council of South Africa took 3 years to drag his name through the mud, put him under huge emotional stress, never mind financial. And at the end of it, they proved precisely nothing. He was completely vindicated on the 21st of April when the Professional Conduct Committee that heard the charge against him, their ruling came down. And every single pillar of the HPCSA's case against him, the committee found him not guilty on all aspects of the charge. So it just raises the question, why did it take them so long? They had so much money, so much time, and they couldn't prove anything.
Yeah.
So it would have been better for everybody if they'd perhaps done their homework a bit better.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you that, because from my side, just following your tweets and your blog with all the commentary, it kind of came across that the main point at the end of the day was really trying to, because this was an ethics case that the council was having to rule on, and that point of, was it a doctor-patient relationship? And it just, to me, it seemed quite crazy. It took 3 years, and I think you've mentioned before somewhere like 10 million rand to get to that decision.
The resources that have been thrown at this case are absolutely astronomical. There are very many bizarre elements to this case, because if the HPCSA genuinely believed that he had a doctor-patient relationship, then from the start, they displayed incredible hypocrisy, double standards, and unfairness, because if they really genuinely believed that there was a doctor-patient relationship, then there would also have been a dietitian-patient relationship between the dietitian who read his tweet and was so horrified at what he said that she reported him to the HPCSA the next day. I don't know if all your viewers and listeners know what Professor Noakes actually said in his tweet. The breastfeeding mother asked him what were good foods for infant weaning, and he said the key is to wean babies onto LCHF. He used the acronym for low, high fat, because the mother asked him if it was okay. So she clearly knew about that. She wasn't a novice. She wasn't just coming out of nowhere and knew nothing about it. If you know anything about low carb, high fat, you would know that what he was actually suggesting was basically real food, food as close to its natural state as possible. And low carb, high fat for babies means meat, fish, eggs, chicken, dairy, and vegetables. And to any normal human being, that doesn't sound like terribly dangerous, threatening advice. Mm-hmm. And yet, there were two dietitians who reacted within a few hours of the tweet, but they reacted very, very strongly. They seemed to think that he was giving the most horrific advice possible. I mean, you would have thought that this man was suggesting that you inject saturated fat into the baby's veins the way these dietitians were carrying on.
I think if anyone reads the tweets, when someone only types in caps, it portrays a lot of anger. And their tweets were only in caps, weren't they? If I remember.
Yes, that's correct. The one dietitian who actually lodged the complaint, she at the time was the president of the Association for Dietetics in South Africa. That's the acronym for that is ATSA. So I'll keep calling them ATSA for short from now on. So that's a voluntary organization, but it's pretty powerful in South Africa. She tweeted, you know, I am horrified. How can you say this? Be sure I will be reporting. And this has got to stop. And all in caps. And in Twitter etiquette, as you say, it's either it is anger, but it's also like shouting at somebody. Mm. So it's rude. And she was denigrating him, which breaches the health profession's code of conduct all on its own, because one health professional is not supposed to denigrate the skills of another. But here you have a dietitian who has a master's degree, she's telling an eminent scientist who is rated A1 that he doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to nutrition. And his A1 rating is not only sports science, it's also nutrition. And part of the evidence against him was that he's not an expert in infant nutrition. And Professor Noakes explained that to be an expert in sports nutrition, you actually really need to know the basics of nutrition for all ages. I mean, it makes sense, because if you're going to tell extreme athletes how to improve their performance, you are going to have to know the greatest detail about nutrition, and you absolutely have to know about nutrition for all ages. So the HPC, that was another thing that the HPCSA was not able to prove, is that Professor Noakes basically doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So the correct terminology for the verdict is that the Health Professions Council's Professional Conduct Committee that heard the charge against him. They found that the HPCSA had not proved that he had a doctor-patient relationship, that he gave medical advice, not information, and that the advice he gave, so they did not prove that the advice he gave was unconventional because it was not evidence-based, and therefore they did not prove that there was any harm or even the potential for harm, never mind be life-threatening, as the dietitian who laid the complaint against him suggested in her letter of complaint. And basically, in their heads of argument, Professor Noakes's legal team argued that this case really had nothing to do with him being a doctor, because Professor Noakes, although he is a registered medical doctor, he hasn't practiced clinical medicine for 16 years. On his Twitter account, he doesn't say that he's a medical doctor. Anybody who follows his tweets knows him as a scientist and an author of best-selling books. The most important one on low carb, high fat is called The Real Meal Revolution. And the success of that book, many people believe, is what stimulated this whole case, because the dietitians were getting so angry that people, the public, were listening to Professor Noakes and not to them. Dietitians seem to have this idea that they should have the monopoly on giving dietary advice to the public. And I mean, there are very many good dietitians and many dietitians with an open mind. And to be a good dietitian, you've got to look at all the evidence. But the evidence that Professor Noakes presented at the trial, and boy, did he present evidence, 6,000 pages of evidence he presented, that referred to over 340 studies and articles and 1,200 slides. The Health Professions Council presented basically one study. That study, it's called the Nordea Review. It was published in the Public Library of Science 1 in 2014. And that study is critical. The HPCSA basically based their whole case against Professor Noakes on that study. And now you might say to me, what's that got to do with him being having a doctor-patient relationship? Mm. And I ask the HPCSA the same question, because on the one hand, they charged him with something that didn't really make any sense, because he hasn't practiced as a medical doctor for 16 years. And as I was saying earlier, if they genuinely believed that he had a doctor-patient relationship, then why didn't they charge the two dietitians who also tweeted? And they went even further than Professor Noakes did. The one dietitian who was the president of ATSA at the time, she even tweeted to the breastfeeding mother and said, don't listen to Professor Noakes, listen to me. Here's my my phone number and my email address. And in legal terms, she was committing something called supersession. And supersession is the legal term when one health professional takes over the patient of another without the other person's knowledge or permission. So here you have one dietitian apparently taking over, if you believe the HPCSA's case, that there was a doctor-patient relationship. So now you have a dietitian stealing a patient, which is against the HPCSA's code of conduct, but the HPC doesn't charge her. They only charge Professor Noakes.
Would the Health Professions Council only, I don't know if this question came up to them, but would their reason being that they wouldn't do anything unless someone laid a charge? So they wouldn't themselves go try to do it. They'd wait for a third party, like another health professional to actually lay that kind of complaint? I'm just wondering.
Sure. Yeah, I wondered that myself, and I tried to get the HPCSA to answer that question. However, you would think that in their investigation, they would think, well, we can't just charge one person when three people basically have committed the quote unquote the same crime.
Mm.
So I don't know if they would have to call all three of them in and talk about it, or get somebody on one of the medical or dietetic boards to lodge a complaint or whatever. But it doesn't really make any sense to when you know that there are three people who supposedly did the same wrong thing, but you're only going to charge one person.
Mm. And did Joan Adams, who was the advocate, we'll get onto that to say who was on the panel, but did she bring that up at all to say that the other parties involved in this, that this situation, that wasn't maybe the correct procedure? Did that ever come up?
It actually did. Now, if I can just explain the structure here. The Health Professions Council, they set up a professional conduct committee, and that's made up of five committee members. Professor Noakes has the right to be tried by his peers. And in this case, because he was being tried as a medical doctor, there had to be three of his peers on the panel. So there were three medical doctors, and there had to be two members of the public. One of those members of the public was Joan Adams, who happens to be a highly qualified lawyer and advocate. And then there was Joe Public. There was a member of the public. His name escapes me right now. And one of the three doctors is a woman called Dr. Janet Giddy. And she asked that very question of one of the HPCSA's expert witnesses that they called. And that witness was called purely to give evidence on the doctor-patient relationship. And I found the choice of him as a witness weird all on its own, because he's actually a professor of psychiatry. His name is Professor Willie Pinar. He's from Stellenbosch University. And he isn't an expert in medical ethics. He has, I think, if I remember correctly, he has a master's and possibly a diploma in medical ethics, but he doesn't have a doctorate, and he's certainly not a professor of medical ethics. And he did say that there's a shortage of medical bioethicists in South Africa, and that much certainly is true. But like all the Health Professions Council's expert witnesses, he did not stand up well under cross-examination. When Professor Noakes' advocate, Michael van der Nest, he's a senior counsel, he put the question to Professor Pinar to say, you know, are you okay with the fact that if you really believe that Professor Noakes had a doctor-patient relationship, then the HPCSA should have charged him. But what about the other two dietitians who did the same thing and even more? And Professor Pinar, I almost felt sorry for him. He looked like the proverbial deer or rabbit caught in the headlights. And he said, yes, but somebody needed to be made an example of, or words to that effect. Professor Noakes' advocate said, are you serious? You know, you really think that only one person should be made an example of? And then when it was question time for the panel, Dr. Janet Giddy asked for clarification, and she said to Professor Pinar, you know, ethically, do you think it's correct that one person should be made a scapegoat when two others get off scot-free. And poor old Professor Pinar really had no answer, because as Professor Noakes's legal team said, the doctor-patient relationship charge from the start was nonsense, because there very clearly was no doctor-patient relationship. There's all sorts of steps that you have to go through. A patient has to ask a doctor to treat them. The doctor has to agree to treat them. There's absolutely no evidence that the breastfeeding mother, her name is Pippa Leenstra, there's no suggestion that she tweeted to Professor Noakes as a medical doctor rather than a scientist. And also the very nature of Twitter. Twitter is an information-sharing platform. Anybody who knows anything about Twitter knows that it's an information-sharing platform. It's not the place where most normal human beings go for a one-on-one consultation with their medical doctor, because it's public.
Yeah.
So, it just isn't somewhere where people go for private consultations with their doctor. So it just comes back to all these really bizarre elements of this case. So, okay, so it wasn't about a doctor-patient relationship. It wasn't about whether he gave medical advice rather than information. And so what was it really about? What was this case really about?
And that's what you said with sorry, I just want to bring a point I had there with because you mentioned the word unconventional and how the verdict came out that at the end of the day, it wasn't unconventional because he was found not guilty. So they were saying that the evidence, those 6,000 pages that he gave as evidence, actually made sense. And so, but then the panel couldn't say that yes, the LCHF is fine. I don't know if maybe you can clarify that part.
Yes. That's a very good question, because Advocate Adams made a point of saying that her committee will not be setting nutrition guidelines for the whole world, because first of all, it's beyond their remit. They were sitting to hear the charge of unprofessional conduct, you know, blah, blah, blah. They were, and they're not scientists. They haven't conducted the research. So they really weren't in a position to give a verdict on the actual science. And the language is very specific. They were saying the HPCSA did not prove their case that the advice that he gave is unconventional. To my mind, what that means to me as a layperson is that currently the HPCSA cannot say that the advice that that Professor Noakes gave is either unconventional, not evidence-based, because, I mean, it so clearly is evidence-based. And then at the end, the most interesting question that lay there for all, you know, in all its naked glory for everybody to see is, if Professor Noakes is not the one giving unconventional, dangerous, life-threatening advice, who could possibly be? And the HPCSA did not present any robust evidence for their side. And I really think that this whole case boomeranged so badly on them. It's left them with red faces, they are ominously quiet. They have 21 days to decide whether they're going to appeal against the verdict. I think they would be absolutely crazy to appeal. Having said that, there have been so many crazy things going on from the very beginning in this trial, that really nothing they could possibly do would surprise me. But I would find it kind of quite shocking, because they've put an eminent scientist through really the most horrific experience, you know, having a sword of Damocles hanging over his head, his reputation trashed, not only in South Africa, but internationally. And I'm sure you know that the HPCSA last year issued a guilty verdict.
I wanted to ask you about that, because you were saying about the twist and the turn, and this part's this is just crazy. But yeah, explain what they did.
Yes, I mean, that was, you could have knocked me over, with the proverbial feather on that one, because I do know that the HPCSA is riddled with corruption. In, I think, late 2014, the government set up a task team to investigate allegations of corruption and incompetence in the HPCSA, and the task team report was devastating. They found that three of the top executives, including the head of their legal department, were unfit to hold office, and incompetence from the top down, The executives who were fingered in the report simply said, well, we're not going to stand down. They just stayed there. So when – I'm just trying to remember, it was at the end of the October 2016 hearing. So that's now – it was more than 2.5 years after the tweet. And it was the end of the fourth hearing. I'm just checking my numbers. Yeah, fourth hearing. The prosecution had brought all their witnesses. They brought six witnesses. Professor Noakes called three expert witnesses. So the prosecution.
And he dubbed those his three angels, didn't he?
Yes, that's public very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Tim's angels. Those were. A British obesity researcher, Dr. Zoe Harkham, and Nina Teicholz. She's an American science writer and journalist. She's the author of a really I'm sure you know the book, groundbreaking book on nutrition science, The Big Fat Surprise.
Yeah, and she got into, I've forgotten which journal recently, that same research that she did. Got published, I think, British Medical Journal or JAMA, one of them. Yeah. So, yeah, it's that level of research.
Yes. And she's taken an absolutely forensic scalpel to the US dietary guidelines that are hugely influential. All the English-speaking countries the rest of the world's English-speaking countries followed the U.S. dietary guidelines after they were launched onto an unsuspecting public in 1977. And Nina has shown how those guidelines had no robust science to back them up in 1977, and the same applies today. Professor Noakes will tell you that the non-English-speaking countries were lucky that they didn't follow the US guidelines, because you just have to look at the results of those guidelines. I mean, epidemics, global epidemics of obesity, diabetes, heart disease, so you just have to think, you know, the definition of insanity, you know, keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Clearly, the dietary guidelines are not working for many people. That goes back to what I think and what Professor Noakes' legal team thinks is really behind this case. What the HPCSA wanted to do was help dietitians muzzle Professor Noakes and shut him up about sugar and carbohydrates, sugar and other carbohydrates, and also the benefits of saturated fat. not only saturated fat, but healthy fats. Mm-hmm. And there are so many myths and misinformation still about fats, because, you know, so many doctors will say, you know, look, he's telling people to eat lots of saturated fat. They're going to die. He's going to kill them on a, practically commit genocide. There's no one food that is 100% saturated fat. I think coconut oil has got a very, very high percentage of saturated fat. But most other foods that have got saturated fat in them have got other. They've got, you know, monounsaturated, some polyunsaturated. So you don't find any food that is 100% saturated fat. Oily fish may have more saturated fat in it than red meat, and yet we still tell people not to eat red meat because it's dangerous. But there's no robust evidence to show it. It's all myth. Hmm. It boosts the low fat, high carb dietary guidelines that are currently dogma, without any science to back them up.
And was that because you've mentioned then the two angels so far, that's Zoe and Nina. Who was the third one?
Nina. And the third one, she calls herself proudly South African Kiwi. She's a South African registered dietitian, or she trained as a dietitian in South Africa at UCT. As far as I recall, she was also one of Professor Noakes' students for a short while. And she now lives and practices in New Zealand. And she was also right on board with low-fat, high-carb. She believed it was the right way to go. She started doing some research and had a very similar Damascene moment, where she realized, oh, you know, I've actually got it all wrong, and I've been giving people the wrong advice for upwards of a few decades, and I must stop it. Because basically, that's what good scientists do. When they are confronted with evidence that completely contradicts a deeply held belief, no matter how long you've held that belief, a good scientist will change his or her mind. But there's this phenomenon called cognitive dissonance, which is it's a psychological term for what happens to people when they are confronted with the evidence and it is so unnerving that they just ignore it and just pretend it's not there. And I would say that who's behind this case? It's cognitively dissonant dietitians and doctors, and behind them are vested interests. In my post, I was starting to find lots of little dots, and I couldn't really work out exactly who was behind it. I mean, I could see dietitians and doctors, especially cardiologists, because they really don't like Professor Noakes because he doesn't like statins. He once called statins the single most ineffective drug ever invented. And the statins have made billions for drug companies and the doctors who prescribe them. The evidence on them is appalling, that you have to treat 149 patients for one to benefit. There is some evidence to show that statins work for secondary prevention if you've already had a heart attack. But the evidence for primary prevention is thin, to say the least.
Yeah, there's some very good other cardiologists and doctors out there also who are with Tim's view that I know of. I can think of Malcolm Kendrick in Scotland and Uwe Ravenskopf in Scandinavia. Yes. You've got Asim Mahatra. There's a lot of other doctors who also follow the same thought pattern as Tim. So yes. Anyone who's interested in that, yeah, makes some great reading.
Yes, Malcolm Kendrick is wonderful. He's not a cardiologist.
Yeah, he's a GP.
GP with a special interest in cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, very special interest. That's someone who's spent a lot of time reading the research around it.
Yeah, I would say that he is as knowledgeable as any cardiologist, although I'm sure cardiologists would hate me for saying that. But he's just written a blog about Professor Noakes's case, and he made a very good point, because he said the message that's come through this trial is a sobering one. Any scientist looking on, the message that statutory bodies like the HPCSA, and it's not only them, you think of what's happening to Dr. Gary Fetke in Australia, his statutory body, the Australian APRA, Australian Health Professionals Regulatory Agency, APRA, and they banned him for life from talking to patients about sugar. And he is an orthopedic surgeon who sees a lot of diabetic patients, and he just doesn't want to keep cutting off people's limbs. Mm. He knows that there is a cheap, safe, effective way of reversing diabetes and reducing the incidence of obesity. He would rather help his patients keep their limbs. And for that, his regulatory agency slapped a lifetime ban on him. I mean, that's as bizarre as what's happened to Professor Noakes.
Mm. But I think, at least with Professor Noakes, we had, I think most people would hopefully think common sense prevailed at the end of the day there.
Yes, yeah. And just to get back to my train of thought about what Malcolm Kendrick said in his blog, that he said any scientist looking on at the case of Professor Noakes, they get this really sobering message from the HPCSA. And, if you say things we don't like, we will drag you through the courts for upwards of 3 years. We will attack you, we will criticize you, we will ridicule and humiliate you. And that's a really frightening prospect. The Health Professions Council of South Africa is a statutory body. Its hearings are not supposed to be adversarial. I keep referring to it as a trial. I mean, I wasn't the first person to start calling it a trial. The public very quickly dubbed it the 21st century, the nutrition trial of the 21st century. They also called it the Banting for Babies trial. But in fact, it very soon became clear that this trial was not about infant nutrition, even though that was one of the HPCSA's claims. And the one study that they used to support their case had absolutely nothing to do with infant nutrition. It was all to do with adult nutrition.
So they didn't present evidence as to baby foods. I guess other common baby foods that we would think of then is like cereals, and say that's why you have to follow this guideline and what Tim Noakes said. They didn't sort of present that evidence then?
Well, actually, they did, but not evidence. One of the most important guidelines for adults and babies in South Africa's nutritional dietary guidelines is the recommendation that people should make starchy foods the basis of all meals.
That's a part of the guidelines.
Yes, and that's for babies, I think – it's for babies older than 12 months, because obviously for the first 6 months, any normal dietary guideline would say exclusive breastfeeding if possible. Mm-hmm. And then you start complementary feeding. The one interesting thing that I found was the HPCSA built a large part of its case on a secret report, which one of its expert witnesses wrote, and for the preliminary committee, that looked into whether or not he should be charged. And that report referred to the Nordea review, which had nothing to do with infant feeding. But the woman who wrote that report, her name is Professor Hester Estee Forster. She's from Northwest University in South Africa. It was formerly called Potchefstroom University. And she wrote South Africa's dietary guidelines. And she wrote the guideline to make starches the basis of all meals. And whenever anyone has asked her where the science is for that, she's never been able to show that with any logic. I mean, there are they will throw up kind of epidemiological studies, but no randomized controlled trials. And she had a very strange rationalization for that recommendation. So not evidence, but rationalization. She said that people should make starchy foods the basis of all meals because you have to look at what populations are eating. And in South Africa, the majority of the poor people, the rural communities, eat a form of carbohydrate called mealie-pap. And it's ground corn, and it's a very high carbohydrate, and it's not a nutrient dense food. You have to
fortify it.
Mm-hmm. So you know it doesn't make any sense to say people should make this kind of food the basis of most meals. It's not a natural, it's not a real food. Mm. And certainly not for babies. My view is that it's not so much what Professor Noak said as what he didn't say that actually got him into all this trouble. When he said, you know, the key is to wean babies onto LCHF, he didn't say, and also please give them cereal. Because that's in the nutrition guidelines for infants is that cereal should be a complementary food. And it's not only Professor Noakes who says cereals are not a complementary food. A complementary food should complete the infant's diet. So if there's anything missing from it, it should fill in those gaps. Mm. And real foods like, you know, meat and eggs and fish and that kind of thing. Once breastfed babies reach the age of 6 months, the breast milk no longer has enough iron. And there's one other nutrient that is lacking at 6 months. I can't remember what it is. But foods like meat and chicken and eggs and all that kind of thing will complete. But you can't call cereals a complementary food, or at least that is how Professor Noakes and people who endorse and support the low-carb, high-fat way of eating. That's how they argue it.
Mm. And also, I think when we're talking low carb, high fat, if I remember, the point came up that we're not talking about a ketogenic diet or ketosis here. It's just saying that it's a lower amount of carbs than maybe the general population would expect with the standard dietary guidelines. Not that we want you to go into a ketogenic state, which created a lot of confusion, if I remember.
Yes. I'm kind of giggling a bit. I shouldn't really be giggling because this was a very serious trial. But there were so many moments that were funny. They would have been funny if they weren't meant so seriously. Every time I heard an expert witness say something like, and it was practically verbatim, Professor Noakes should never have advised a ketogenic diet for babies. And I was sitting there thinking, where did they get that from? Low-carb, high-fat is not a synonym for a ketogenic diet. And ketogenic diets are on a spectrum. Low carb is a spectrum from practically zero carb to much higher carb, but not as high as conventional high carb, low fat dietary guidelines would allow. And practically every single expert witness, except for the legal officer that they brought in, they all spoke about ketogenic diets. And I have absolutely no idea why.
So there was a confusion. There was just an inherent confusion there that just was very hard to break in the beginning, I guess.
Well, I mean, it showed. I'm not so sure that it was confusion. To my mind, it showed complete ignorance because of what a ketogenic diet really is. And ketogenic diets work wonders for epileptic children. Mm-hmm. So it has a very specific medical use. And I remember one of the nutrition professors from Northwest, she was saying, a ketogenic diet is must be under medical supervision. And I'm thinking, yes, but he wasn't talking about that. Mm. He was talking about real food for babies. And the carbohydrate content that he would advocate is vastly higher than you would even vaguely think of for a ketogenic diet. Mm. So, it's just like night and day to be talking about it. And so these were obviously professors of nutrition who know very little about ketosis. They seemed to be conflating it with ketoacidosis. And even I know that ketoacidosis is very, very different from ketosis. Mm-hmm. Ketosis is a benign bodily state. Mm-hmm. Ketoacidosis is potentially fatal. So how they could possibly conflate the two, and these are supposed to be professors of nutrition. So
just another confusing point in this saga that he had to go through to try explain those points to people.
And when it came down to the charge against him of unprofessional conduct, it also raises the question, why didn't they subpoena the breastfeeding mother? To ask her, did you think Professor Noakes was your doctor? And I have absolutely no doubt that she would have said no. And that's probably the reason why they didn't call her. But that goes to show that there was bias from the start against Professor Noakes. And the HPCSA has as much duty towards Professor Noakes as they do towards the dietitian who complained. And yet they were arguing right in the dietitian's corner. So it just all went back to what is really going on here. And when I mentioned earlier that in my posts I had identified a whole lot of dots, be they the names of doctors who were peripherally involved, and the list of doctors involved directly and indirectly in this case is a very, very long, not only doctors, dietitians, but doctors as well. And then I was also thinking that, are there food and drug industries behind this because they benefit from conventional dietary advice? And it took a brilliant American investigative journalist, Russ Green. I don't know if you read his piece. Mm-mm. It's from CrossFit. And he joined all my dots. He found that they led to this very shady outfit. It's called It sounds really good. It's called the International Life Sciences Institute.
This is the Coca-Cola one.
Yes, it's actually a front for Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I've vaguely heard of that. Yeah, this is why I know of
Ilse. And he had a look. He was investigating Ilse for something else, something that had gone on in the U.S. And he started looking at all the Ilse links with many of the expert witnesses that the HPCSA has called. And it may just be coincidence that there are direct links between many, if not practically all, of the HPCSA's witnesses against Professor Noakes. Russ Green thinks that Ilse has quite a direct hand in this case.
And from what I understand, they've closed down now, haven't they? That organization is, I'm not sure if that's the same one, because all the funding and this, you know, came out with Coca-Cola, and I think whatever university it was linked to decided to close that program.
I haven't heard that Ilse has closed down. I'm not 100% sure about that. I don't know.
No, I'd have to look. Okay, so now we've gone through all the madness and some of these twists and turns with Professor Noakes' case, and as you said, where it didn't seem like it was a middle ground, and you had two people who could argue in between, and the Health Professions Council was just in the middle. It felt like it was Tim trying to defend against this bigger body who was just, everyone was against him. And so now with the not guilty verdict, how is Tim, and where do we think things are going to go? What's your feelings, or what have you heard?
Well, certainly the verdict has been a complete vindication for him. So it must be a huge relief. However, what the implications of it are for the future of dietary advice, only time will tell. If ATSA's first statement after the verdict is anything to go by, it's just going to be business as usual. And ATSA put out a statement saying that they've always had the greatest respect for Professor Noakes, which that struck me as a touch disingenuous, but be that as it may. And then they just went on to say they won't be changing their dietary advice because they give evidence-based advice. So I'm thinking, well, what are you saying about the 6,000 pages of evidence that he presented? So are you going to continue to do what you've done up to now, which is ignore the bits of evidence that don't suit your point of view? That's why I think ATSA really is in crisis. ATSA has now taken on a PR consultant who does crisis management, and yet they have their own PR company. So why they would need another PR company who handles crisis management, I don't know. Because ATSA is saying we're not really in crisis. So, you know, there's all this kind of semantic sophistry going on. And what about the public? The public has a right to all the information, not just the bits that suits a particular expert's point of view. I have yet to meet any low-carb, high-fat expert, and I'm talking here of people like Dr. Eric Westman and Professors Stephen Finney and Jeff Wallach, those three are like the fathers of low-carb, high-fat dietary advice in the U.S., I've yet to hear them say that LCHF is the only way. What they do say is that if you have got obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and you've been eating low-fat, high-carb diets, try LCHF first before you take drugs. And that, to me, is reasonable. It doesn't seem to be, you know, unethical, mad, bad, dangerous. So I really don't understand why there's so much vilification of people who promote low carb, high fat. I know about fat phobia, and it's very difficult for people to get over that fear because, you know, the cardiologists will say, oh, you know, if you eat too much butter, it's going to clog up your arteries, as if your cardiovascular system is like kitchen plumbing. It's not.
Okay, so hopefully I think everyone's got a clear idea then of a little bit of what's gone on. We've already been talking for an hour here, and this is just a touch on what you had to listen and also report on over the three-year process that Professor Tim Noakes had to go through. So do you have a central resource? I know because you did all your reporting on your website. Do you have a central resource, because you've got so many posts on this, that someone could go to on your website just to get started if they wanted to read the story?
Oh, thanks very much for asking that. Because there was so much interest locally and internationally on this case, I have a dedicated page on foodmed.net. It's just called the Tim Noakes Trial. It's all my writings, because I've covered the case from the very word go, right up until the ruling on the 21st of April 2017. So you can find it all there.
Okay. And that's why Professor Tim Noakes calls you his fourth angel, because you reported everything and you kept it well documented. So I would highly recommend anyone to go to your website to really get a better overview of exactly what's happened in this case, all the twists and the turns and the characters involved in it. So I just want to say, before we cut off, thank you very much, Marika, for coming onto the show and trying to give a little bit of an insight as to exactly what Professor Tim Noakes had to go through with his case. I really want to also say, probably from anyone who follows the LCHF sort of diet, that we've all enjoyed your tweets. I know anyone who wanted to keep up to date had to follow your Twitter profile to try keep up to date. So I'm sure on behalf of everyone who is in that community, which includes myself, I would say thank you so much for actually going through all that effort and actually helping get the message out internationally so anyone in the world could keep up to date.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me on your show, Gary, because I think really, just as a closing comment, I think Professor Noakes has won a big battle here, but the war definitely goes on. And I think it's going to be an even more fierce war from now on in nutrition science circles. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, great. All right. So again, thanks very much. And I'll put all the links to your profile on your website on the show notes. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Marika.
Take care. Hey.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.